Hi, this is Dr. Nicole Berkins, and today we'll be mapping screen time on the 15-Minute Matrix.
Welcome to the 15-Minute Matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'm thrilled to be speaking with Dr. Nicole Berkins, a unique combination of psychologist, nutritionist, and special education teacher. Dr. Nicole Berkins has 20 years of experience supporting children, young adults, and families to improve behavior naturally. She's an expert in evaluating and treating a wide range of learning, mood, and behavior challenges, including ADHD, autism, anxiety, mood disorders, and brain injury. Dr. Nicole has a doctorate in clinical psychology, master's degree in special education and nutrition, and is a board-certified nutrition specialist. She's the founder and director of Horizons Developmental Resource Center in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and is a best-selling author, award-winning therapist, and published researcher. Let's not waste any more time so we can get right down to business and discuss screen time. Welcome, Dr. Nicole. I'm super excited to have you here, and I can't think of anybody better to discuss this topic with.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Let's start out today talking about how patients, how children, how adults use screen time, possibly as a mediator.
It's interesting. We're at this point in history with screens and electronics where we've never been before, right? We've got more of these devices and things in our lives than ever before. And we're kind of like guinea pigs with trying to figure out how to use these, how to fit them into our lives, how to have a healthy relationship with these things. And boy, there are a lot of ways that kids and adults use technology, use devices to just sort of cope with or manage things in their lives. I mean, I was just meeting with a teenager a little while ago who really is struggling with a lot of things in his life and has discovered now for a long time that immersing himself in the world of social media and his smartphone and some of the games that he has on there is a really great way to avoid thinking about and dealing with some of the things that are going on in his life that are tough and that are kind of making him feel bad. And I think to a certain extent, we all do that in different ways. And I think that's kind of the big thing is using those kinds of devices, the technology that's available to us, maybe to kind of avoid dealing with some of the things that we ought to be thinking about and dealing with.
It's so interesting because I know you and I are both moms of teens as well. So we see some of these things firsthand at home as well as in our practices. And even thinking about the different forms of screen time, I remember hearing about a friend's child, a son, who was playing some of these really realistic games. Mm-hmm. And he actually was getting a dream issues because he was so attached to the characters and their well-being, and he couldn't keep them safe. So the more realism we see, are we seeing more impacts on the kind of full body systems?
Absolutely. And in the way that you talked about, where the more graphic and realistic the games and those types of things, yes. And then we also have the component of social media, which is real people and things going on in their real lives, or at least what they're putting out there as their real life. And it's such a big issue with a lot of teens and young adults now, especially of getting caught up in these online relationships, these things on social media, where they really are taking on the burdens of what's going on with other people. They really are experiencing the stress of these things as if it was happening to them. And so it's a big problem, and it impacts kids and adults, obviously, on the level of mental health, emotionally, relationally, but also physically.
So we can then see how screen time can work as a triggering event in other health conditions. I'm imagining that it can also impact the GI and really make somebody so uncomfortable that they start to have digestive issues as well from the stress.
Absolutely. We know that stress impacts every part of our body. The brain and the body are totally connected. So when we've got these emotional or relational stressors going on, it certainly impacts everything about digestion, the GI tract, all of that. It impacts our immune system as well. So certainly these are some of the very real physical health problems that can happen as a result of unhealthy use of screens and electronics.
So let's head over to the skills section of the Functional Nutrition Matrix, that right-hand side where I know you are a superstar, and start at the top and talk about sleep. Maybe looking both at how screen time can impact sleep negatively and also start to look at some of the interventions that you might bring in to wean people off of their habits.
Sleep's a great one to start with, because if there's one really tangible area where we have strong research showing a connection between tech usage, screen time, and problems, it's in the area of sleep, both for children and adults. And we know that particularly the blue light that is emitted from these devices really does suppress melatonin production. We're supposed to be having more melatonin being produced as we're getting closer to bedtime, as it's the evening. And unfortunately, the blue lights from these devices, whether it's tablets or smartphones or computers or whatever it is, are tricking our brain into thinking that it's daytime and suppressing that melatonin production, which then sets people up for having a more difficult time falling asleep. And when they have a more difficult time falling asleep, then they tend to, you know, I can't fall asleep, I'm going to be on my phone, I'm going to read something on my tablet, you know, whatever. And then we just get this cycle going where even when they do fall asleep, they're not getting good deep sleep. It really just messes with your circadian rhythms and with your entire wake-sleep cycle. So that's one of the components that really is problematic. And of course, the solution there, the simplest thing to be working with people on, is having a period of time prior to winding down for bedtime where you're going device free, or at most maybe watching a program on television or something which doesn't have that same blue light impact because it's farther away from your eyes and from your face. But really having this at least hour period of time leading up to sleep where we are getting off those devices so that we allow our brain to get into that pattern of, okay, it's going to be time to wind down and go to sleep now. So that's a big thing that I talk with patients and with families about. The other component that I think really impacts the sleep is related to the content
exactly
of what's being consumed on these devices, right? So I'll talk with kids and parents about, there's a difference between using like a meditation or relaxation app, for example, leading up to bedtime, and playing a really intense graphic video game or watching a crime movie.
Exactly.
Or
the news.
Something intense.
The news these days. Yeah. You know, you start to get those adrenal hormones going that should be, that cortisol should be down at its low point, and we start to activate our own fight or flight because, like you said, we're invested in the stories we're hearing or looking at.
That's right. And so that then is another piece that really makes it difficult to fall asleep, but also, as we know, when those cortisol levels are high, even if we fall asleep, we're going to have dysregulation then physiologically during the night. We're going to be more prone to waking up. Maybe we'll fall asleep for a while, but then we'll wake up, have a hard time going back to sleep. So obviously we want to be wise about what we're consuming on devices in those evening hours as we're heading towards sleep.
It's really amazing to think how many practitioners don't necessarily look at the behavioral patterns around sleep and bedtime. So we might see dysregulated adrenal curves, we might see dysregulated blood sugar, insulin levels, and we might see depression. And we go right to what I call the tier three issues. We go right to trying to solve for that without looking at what the upstream factors may be. And you're articulating in this arena how this impact of the blue light, of the content, could really be one of the major upstream factors in a lot of hormone and neurohormone downstream diagnoses.
I really believe that's true. Every day that I'm in practice, I see that more and more. And I think it's just a function of, you know, I've been in practice for 20 years. These devices have proliferated more in the last several years. I don't see any patients where this is not an issue that we need to talk about. Mm-hmm. And it does have a profound effect. We just kind of forget about it. We think, well, I'll deal with the hormone issues, those things, those are the big rocks. And actually, it's like, you know, sometimes just discussing some of these basic interventions and helping people tune into how these kinds of behaviors and how our relationship with technology and screens is impacting us on a physiological level as well as an emotional level. I mean, these are really basic things that we can do then to make a significant difference and quickly. These things that people can implement quickly and they will see change quickly.
Are you having any pushback when you're bringing up these topics in your practice with children, with teens, with parents who are nervous about taking away that crutch from their kids?
Absolutely. And I think that that's a great point, is that sometimes I think as clinicians, we shy away from raising some of these issues because we're worried about the pushback. But I find that education goes a long way. And I expect that kids and teenagers are not going to be happy with me raising these topics. But they also need guidance and they need education about why this is important. And so I talk to them about it. I explain at a more basic level what we're talking about right now, about why I'm concerned with their screen time, why I'm concerned about their behaviors around technology, how that's impacting their brain and their body. And then we talk about how they probably won't like some of the boundaries and expectations that I'm going to have mom and dad put in place, but they understand why we're doing it. And when you build that foundation of education and understanding, whether it's with a child or with an adult, I think that's really where we need to start. Because if we're going to ask somebody to do something and it's going to be hard for them to do or they don't like it and they don't know why they're doing it, there's absolutely zero motivation to comply with that recommendation.
Absolutely. I feel like you're singing my tune here. Whenever we get together, I feel like, oh, this is my long lost best friend.
Yes.
Dr. Absolutely. Nicole, I love you. What has been the most kind of compelling research that you've seen recently around screen time and its impacts on the body, on the brain, especially for children, that you've been kind of calling on in these discussions with parents?
I think some of the most compelling stuff that's come out recently is related to mental health issues and children and teenagers as it relates to screen time. Mm-hmm. And we have just several really well done studies now over the last year showing a clear connection between higher levels of ADD and ADHD, depression, anxiety, other types of mood and behavioral disorders in relation to the amount of time that kids are spending. And what we're seeing across the board, whether we're talking about a study that came out a few weeks ago showing that as teens' use of electronics, as their time on screens increases, so too does the likelihood that they will get an ADD or ADHD diagnosis in high school. So whether we're talking about that or we're talking about rates of anxiety and depression, we're seeing the same patterns. The more time that human beings are spending on these devices and immersed in the kinds of things that they're doing on these devices, the more likely they are to have one or more of a large number of mental health types of issues. To me, that is not surprising based on what I've just observed in clinical practice over the last decade, but it is powerful to see in black and white the studies showing, look, this is a real thing. This isn't just an idea that it's probably not good for us to spend excessive amounts of time on these things. There's actual data now showing how we're setting ourselves up for these kinds of serious problems by not moderating our use of these things and by not supporting our kids to moderate and have healthy use.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that we look sometimes and wonder, why is there an increase in all of these symptoms or diagnoses? And we forget to look at the environmental impact, basically, this impact that our changing culture has on the way we think and interact. And I'm imagining you see it also impact relationships, whether it's relationships with siblings or with parents or or the connection that kids have with their classmates, because social time might be spent locked up in your room communicating by playing a game with somebody across the country or even across the street.
Yes, or sitting next to you.
Right.
Right? Right. I mean, we've seen that. Watch a group of teenagers sitting at a restaurant together, and they're there physically together, and they're not relating to one another. They've all got their face in their smartphone.
Right.
I won't just throw teens under the bus. I see adults doing that too.
Definitely.
Or families sitting down to a meal, and the toddler's got a tablet in front of them watching a cartoon. Mom or dad's got their smartphone out. Teenager over here. Yeah, we're together, but we're not together.
Right.
And to me, that is a really foundational issue, especially when we're talking about children and teenagers who need exposure to relationships with other people in order to grow and develop, not only socially, but emotionally, but cognitively in all those ways. And the impact that it's having of us physically being together, but not really being in relationship with one another, it's really a problem. And we've seen studies too showing that even things like basic conversation skills, manners, basic kinds of social interaction skills really take a hit when kids are raised in environments where most of their relationships or most of their interaction happens with a screen in front of them. So there's a lot of reasons to really be thinking about the relational component too.
This is amazing. It's really important to think about asking questions about screen time as a non-negotiable that we address as practitioners. Is there anything else that we didn't discuss today that you just think is a glaring concern that you want to bring to the attention of other practitioners when considering this issue?
I think it's just what you just touched on is the importance of having this as a point of discussion and information gathering early on in the process of working with patients. We have it as part of our intake paperwork, asking questions about devices that are used, how much time is spent, the types of things they're doing, and then that is a jumping off point for conversation during our intake appointment or at some point early on in the process, because I look at this as just as important to the process of identifying what the root issues are and then developing a treatment plan. It's just as important as looking at their nutritional intake, looking at what they're doing for exercise or movement, looking at their sleep. This is a core component that we need to be asking about and we need to be considering in our treatment planning process.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Dr. Nicole. I really appreciate your time and your wisdom.
Thank you for having me.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like us to notify you each time there's a new podcast episode ready and waiting for you, just go to 15minutematrix.com/notify and let us know there. You have an invitation to email us. You can always email us. We want to know who you'd like to hear on the podcast and what you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix. You can email us at ask@15minutematrix.com. That's ask@15minutematrix.com.